Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by The Life of Eight, connecting sports and fashion with a mission of inspiring individuals to be like their sporting idols. Visit thelifeofeight.com for some incredible clothing. Now, my guest this evening has been there, done that, designed the t-shirt, wore it and sold it to football royalty. Calling my guest a pioneer in football journalism is an understatement. There aren't many credible journalists out there who can boast such a CV. Now, just to give you a rough idea about this gentleman's credentials, he has been in the game for 4 decades, writing over 80 books with sales hitting over the 1 million mark. I've had some incredible guests on the show, players who played in World Cups and won Premier League titles, managers who've won FA Cups, journalists and personalities whose names dangle. However, when it comes to the who's who of personalities in the game, this man is known by everyone, and whoever says they don't know him needs to recognise this legend. It gives me great pleasure to introduce the undisputed king of football journalism, Harry Harris. Harry, welcome to Shoot the Defence. It's an absolute pleasure having you on.
Yeah, my pleasure to be with you. No problem.
Thank you very much, Harry. How you been anyway? You been good?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, busy as always, and still active, so still going strong. Doing plenty of TV and radio broadcasting as well, so no problem at all.
Glad you're enjoying it.
Sure am.
Well, Harry, you've been on a remarkable journey and you're still going strong. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it true your path into journalism started when your careers advisor said you had no chance of making it as a footballer?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know where you found that fact from, but yeah, absolutely true. I did have a trial. My dear old mum wrote a letter to Bill Nicholson, which was something that surprised me. But she was determined that I had a chance, if nothing else. And he wrote a very nice letter back to her and sent a scout down to watch me. But his club and one or two others were keen to sign Dennis Rove and Terry Brizzley, who were playing in the same team.
Oh, very nice, very nice. So who were your heroes growing up? I take it you're a Spurs fan, is that right?
That's correct. Big giveaway, because I've done a few books called Down Memory Lane, 55 years following Spurs. But, yeah, I mean, growing up, obviously the double team was something that influenced me greatly. Their style of football was inspiring. Jimmy Greaves was my favourite player then and still is. I mean, there's been some terrific players playing for Spurs and indeed other clubs down the years, but he remains my favourite all-time player.
Great stuff. What's it like interviewing your heroes?
It can be good, it can be bad. It's often said you should never meet your heroes because they can often disappoint you, but one of my great heroes through the years was Glenn Hoddle, great artist, and not only met him, written books about him and with him, but now in business with him. We own a company together called H&H Sports Media Limited, and it's a privilege and a pleasure to have a company with him.
Sounds like a very, very exciting project. Now, Harry, tell me about life at the local North London Weekly Herald. What are your earliest memories?
Well, it was writing a letter to the local paper about Spurs and having it published was a great inspiration, leading me down the path of journalism. It was not only my careers master who said I'll never make a footballer, but he also said I'll never make a journalist. He just said it was just too difficult. Too many kids of my age dreamed of either playing football or writing about sport or football. And it was far too competitive, and he dismissed it as a possibility. But I think if you want to go into this game, you have to have perseverance is the key, is the first quality you need.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we found that firsthand through the show that, you know, there are a lot of people that are very, very helpful, and some of them are quite the opposite. But, you know, you became a sports editor at the paper within 6 months of getting the job. Then you moved on to the evening news before switching to the Daily Mail. Now, given the amount of competition for roles at mainstream newspapers back then, you must have felt a little accomplished getting that position, no?
Yeah, I mean, it was perseverance, but also a great deal of hard work. You know, I worked behind the scenes with Victor Roundon, who was an iconic figure for news gathering on the old evening news. And people were aware of the work I was doing, so I wasn't coming into it as completely unknown. People was appreciative of the news gathering qualities, even at that early stage. But it was a privilege to work for such papers, you know, the Evening News and then the Daily Mail, where, of course, Tom Clark was my first sports editor there, and a great inspiration he turned out to be. And more recently, we met up with Tom and a few of the old Daily Mail sports writers, and that was a great pleasure.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, Harry, these days you've got a lot of budding journalists that obviously look up to those such as yourself who've been there and done that, so to speak. Now, what advice would you give to these budding journalists? Because the one thing I've always learned is you've got to have something different. You've got to be unique as to get that interest. You know, you don't have to write a certain way, but try not to copy others, so to speak, or copy their style. What advice would you give youngsters?
Well, I think it's a changing a media profile these days. A lot of it's online, a lot of it's social media, and the competitive edge and the nature of it has changed dramatically, and I'm still trying to keep pace with it myself, even at my old age. But I think to find a quality that's different is exceedingly difficult, but it's worth pursuing. But for me, there's no substitution, and I still think, no matter what the media, what the medium might be, social media or whatever it is, people are on the lookout for hard-hitting, news-breaking, something different that you can give them that they can't see elsewhere. Now, we're inundated with fake news. It's hard for people to know what's real and what's not, and there's so much speculation you find in the media that is false, if not fake, whether it's made up or just a glimmer of truth to it and not properly checked out. But I would say a journalist who actually gets to know people, gets to be in a position where they can check their facts and produce material that has a certain substance to it, would almost be unique these days.
No, absolutely, I agree. Now, you mentioned social media, Harry, and while many are set in their ways, you've embraced change and bought a first-class ticket on the Digital Express, so to speak. Now, of course, social media and the internet has its good and bad points, and obviously keyboard warriors and clickbait and fake news, as you just said. Now, last year we saw at least 7 newspaper closures, most of which were local papers. Now, someone who started their career at a local paper, how do you feel about this, and has the internet played a huge part in their demise?
Well, it has indeed, but local papers are still going strong, and my recommendation would be for any budding young sports writers or journalists is to get themselves down to the local paper, get themselves known there, and get the groundwork done, and find out what communication skills in journalism are really like at ground level in a local paper, rather than all on the internet and third or fourth hand. It's a real experience being in a newsroom and finding out what life is about in the media.
So I guess it's kind of like grassroots, no? If you want to talk about journalism, working at a local paper is like your grassroots.
Indeed, and that's where everyone should start and learn the grassroots, learn from experience the basics. My guess is that there's a lot of youngsters out there that don't know the basics, that they can't touch type, they don't do shorthand, they rely on all the new technology and dictaphones and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, that's fine. It can be more accurate. But you know, grassroots is not a bad way. Grassroots football, you're working your way through the academy. This is very similar. And in all forms of life, it's really the same. You have to start at an academy level, grassroots level, and learn your trade. And I find there's too many young people here think that a degree is their academy work, and I don't think it is.
That's a fair point. Now, Harry, obviously, you know, you've been around for quite a while. You've seen practically everything there is to see in football. How do you stay interested in it? And the reason why I ask is because there have been numerous occasions where there's been a game on the telly. I might have to do some research for our Tuesday night shows, and I'll say, you know what, I really can't be bothered to watch this. You know, how do you stay motivated to do something like this, or, you know, for so long?
I think it's a basic love of the game, and if you don't really appreciate it and enjoy it, then my solution is don't do it, because I think whatever you're going to do in life, if you're a young person, do something you enjoy. Do something that you really are interested in. Don't do it because it sounds good and it might be profitable or lucrative down the line. Do it because you enjoy it, because you love it and have a real interest and feel for it. If you have a good feel for it, you'll never tire of it.
No, that's right. I completely agree with you. And we've seen over the past few years how YouTube has obviously catapulted people at certain levels, even people that are just vloggers, so to speak. And if you want to monetize it, it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult these days. There's so much competition. And the thing is, Harry, I can't actually even begin to imagine how many matches you've covered and even stories that you've written about. I mean, when you look back at the best and worst moments in football, is there a specific one that stands out for you?
Well, I mean, probably the most iconic one was, I think I was only 13, 14, and was there at Wembley watching the World Cup when England won it. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for it to happen again, and I'm determined to hang on until it does. Don't know when that'll be. I've been there at certain moments which you'd call football history. You know, I was there in the Azteca Stadium for the Diego Maradona Hand of God goal, and I've met him since and asked him about it, which is a phenomenal experience. And of course, also Rodgers, his wonderful goal against England. It spans a long time, and I've been very lucky to have seen all those games and had the pleasure of meeting these people. I think the problem young people have got coming into sports journalism these days is that it's all so remote. You don't get to really meet the managers and the players in a social environment where they can relax and things can be off the record, and you've got a feel for what they're really thinking, and it helps you in your perception of them and your writing about them. I don't think that happens very often these days.
No, I agree. Now, if you cast your mind back to, say, Daniel Taylor, you know, he did a remarkable job when you know, with the Steve Walters and Andy Woodward story, the sexual abuse involving Barry Bennell. Are there any stories that you wish that you broke when you see others?
Oh, the multitude of them, all of them. If you have a great competitive edge, either as a player or as a journalist, you wish you'd broken them all. Not possible, obviously. And the one you've picked out there is highly commendable. The guy's won numerous awards for them. But I know down the years, probably some of the best stories I ever produced never won awards. And there's politics behind that and reasons behind it. And then, you know, people who judge it have certain views about you and certain views about people you're writing about. There's a lot of bias and there's a lot of hurdles to get over before you can, you know, actually win those type of awards. But, you know, they get great satisfaction when you do. And I've been fortunate enough to win a fair share, so I'm not going to be greedy.
I agree. Well, Harry, another question, mate, with regards to stories of being bright. Have you encountered any stories where you felt a little bit uncomfortable? And I'll give you an example. When I was invited to do the to cover the press launch of the Save Association with Ian Ackley and Paul Stewart, David Dwight, and Derek Bell. I knew those guys, you know, so it didn't feel uncomfortable for me to ask them questions about their past. But, you know, when you were younger, were there any specific stories that you kind of felt, maybe I shouldn't step on just in case I get it wrong?
No, I think you have to be, you have to believe in your convictions, believe that if you are onto something, that you should pursue it. No, I don't think you should ever be uncomfortable. The only reason you'd be uncomfortable is if you're not sure of your facts, or you know, you're going down a line where perhaps you shouldn't be. But if you've done your research and you've worked hard on the subject and you know what you're talking about, then you shouldn't be fearful about approaching it at any level.
Fair point. Now, speaking about touchy subjects, I'm sure the Hillsborough disaster brings back many memories. What is your take on the Premier League's decision to back the government's decision to reject plans for safe standing in some sections of grounds?
I agree with it. I find it absolutely nauseating that the subject should even be raised. You know, unfortunately, you talk to someone who's very biased, is a way of putting it, on this subject, because I was at Hillsborough, as you know, and campaigned vigorously on a number of issues, one of them being that there should be all-seater stadium. And, of course, that has led to a higher degree of safety. Now, why anyone could possibly think that reversing that in any shape or form is progression, I just don't understand it.
That's fair enough. I mean, I'm sure you've obviously read about, you know, John Darch and what he's trying to do with the Safe Standing Roadshow. Have you guys had any dialogue regarding his plans and his ideas?
No. I've not heard anything from him personally, and I've been reluctant to even give it much credibility in any shape or form. I just would not approve of it. You know, I think anyone who experienced what happened at Hillsborough and the aftermath of it just would find the whole thing nauseating. I can't put it any other way. I just think it defies logic to me that it's a retrogressive step, surely. If all-seater stadium has led to greater safety and greater controls, you know, we periodically see hooliganism rearing its ugly head again. I've never felt that it's ever really disappeared. You know, sport reflects society, and we're living in a society that has a lot to be desired. And I'm afraid that even if it had some merit, it wouldn't be long before it was abused.
I appreciate your honesty. Thank you. Harry, of all the books you've written, which one would you say involved the most research and time to complete?
Well, surprisingly, they all take a great deal of research. It's something that doesn't take me a great deal of time because, you know, you either know your stuff or you don't, but the fact is that there are some books that take longer. For example, the one that is coming out on May the 3rd is Pelé's Life and Times. It was first published just before the year 2000. And the research I did, I interviewed Pelé in Amsterdam, in Rio, in Dusseldorf, everywhere around the world that I came across Pelé, I was interviewing him for the book. And I interviewed a number of the team, which I still believe the greatest team that lived, which was the 1970 Brazilian World Cup winning team. I interviewed a number of those players about Pelé. So that was a very thorough research job, painstaking research, because I think the subject deserved it. And nearly 20 years later, I was asked to fully revise it and update it, and a lot's happened to him in the last 20 years. So really, it's almost a new book about his life. And unfortunately, you know, it may very well be the last World Cup he attends, even if he can make it, because his health hasn't been good, particularly surgery to his knees and his hip replacement, and other health problems he's had, which is a shame. But it really reminds me about how the book came about, because all those years ago, I was reading a book about Brazilian football and rang my literary agent. I was on holiday abroad, and I said, look, I've just read this book about Brazilian football. It's fascinating, but there's not enough about Pelé. Very little, isn't it? So I'd love to write an authoritative biography. And he said, well, there'd be dozens of books about Pelé. I said, well, find out. And he rang back the next day and said, you'll be surprised to learn there's only been one written in Portuguese, translated very poorly into English. And you're right, he certainly deserves a book about him.
Wow.
I met up with Pelé and I said, look, before I undertake this, I'd like you to give your blessing. He got up, he gave me a great big hug, and he said, I can't believe anyone wants to write my life story.
Wow. Wow. That really is something. That really is something. And I'll tell you this, Harry, I mean, look, we've seen other footballers, you know, past and present, have biographies written about them, or even them write their own autobiographies. And for Pelé not to have one biography out there, apart from, well, one credible one anyway, is remarkable, given what he's brought to the game.
Well, since then, I mean, I said to him, really, the reason was he'd had a little decline. You know, he hadn't been invited to a World Cup. He'd had some problems because he'd become a minister in Brazil, and there was a lot of political issues at the time, and he'd fallen out a bit with FIFA. And he wasn't really where he should have been. And it was, I think the timing was interesting, because he felt the interest in him had declined. And I told him, I don't think that's true. And I think a biography about him would revive the interest. And I said, it won't be long before publishers will be queuing up to write your autobiography, which, of course, 3 years later, it happened just as I suggested it would. But there hasn't been a book about him, you know, a great in-depth biography about him for a few years now. So I hope the public will receive this quite warmly.
I'm certain they will, Harry. I'm certain they will. And as far as I'm aware, it's on pre-order, isn't it? Is that right?
Well, in Walter Stone's W.H. Smith and Amazon Online, at least, it's on pre-order. With the publication date of May the 3rd. So, you know, your timing is impeccable.
I try. Speaking of timing, it's a little under 2 weeks away from the Glenn Hoddle's debut at Lashings in Kent, Maidstone. It's via your Footy Legends 100, or at Footy Legends 100. Would you like to tell us a bit more about this partnership you have with Glenn Hoddle? Because I've looked at the Zapsport website, very informative. I like the content, and you're contributing to it as well, which makes it even more interesting. Talk to me. How did this partnership begin?
Well, I've known Glenn for many, many years at Spurs. I wrote his autobiography just before he left for Monaco. And we've known each other for a long time. When he became England manager, I wrote books about England and his time there. You know, I think we had a very close affinity over the years, professional one. And when he came back from Spain from after nearly 5 years with his academy out there, he came to see me for some ideas about what he wanted to do, etc. And we set up the sporting public relations company, H&H Sports Media. He thinks it's Hoddle and Harris, but of course it's Harris and Hoddle. But a couple of things we started. First of all, we did Zap Sports and our online content, and also Football 30, an interesting Legends tournament where Glenn has revised the rules. It's only 15 minutes each half. And we've had, you know, 100 legends playing some of our tournaments, and the players and the supporters, they love it. So that worked quite well. That gave us all an enormous amount of pleasure. And from there, I've also, that's still going. And I've also set up this Footy Legends 100 concept. And we're seeing where that goes. At the moment, we're with it. I've done 4 or 5 films, and we've had some film premieres at the Sanctum Hotel. That's worked very well. And now we're looking at the World Cup. I'm doing Legends World Cup at Planet Hollywood. So companies or individuals or groups of fans can pick their game, pick their legend, have some good food and wine, and enjoy the buzz, enjoy the games at Planet Hollywood. And that's being marketed now.
It's a very, very interesting concept you've got there, because I actually haven't seen that done before ever, especially at Planet Hollywood. It's got the draw, it's the perfect venue for such an incredible event, and I really wish you luck with it, Harry, because as I said, it's groundbreaking, really. I'm pretty sure other people will start doing that soon.
Yeah, get a few of your friends together and come down. I mean, you book directly from Planet Hollywood, they're priced it all, they're doing a 2-course meal. We're going to have the World Cups there, the Jules Remy Cup and the current World Cup of picture opportunities. So it'll be good food, good drink, and there's a bit of buzz around there, and there's 3 separate corporate sections, so with the big screens, it'll be a great deal of fun, and they're only charging £99 a person. I think that's great value, so get a few friends together and come down.
Fantastic. And do you control the Twitter account? Are you the one with the thumbs behind the iPad, so to speak?
Well, that's a trade secret, but the answer is yes. I don't do my own Twitter account because, when I left newspapers, I started off with ESPN, became their ESPN SoccerNet. I became their football correspondent. And I was posting some articles there and thousands of comments. I would get thousands of comments in some articles, but say there was 1,000 comments, 500 was about the article. The other 500 was about me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, I'm obviously Marmite to a lot of fans, so some of them love me and the other lot hated me. So rather than pursue that line, I thought, right, I'll forget about social media for me, but I am doing the social media on Footy Legends 100, yes. Mm.
Well, Harry, as I said, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. You know, I can't stress to our listeners how much knowledge of the game you have. It's absolutely unbelievable. You know, I was telling friends of mine, you know, I'm going to have Harry Harris on the show, and they're like, are you kidding me? How did you get this guy on? I'm like, listen, I bought a ticket and I won, I guess. So, Harry, I really appreciate your time. And is it true that your wife is also a writer as well?
Well, she is. Yeah, she was the features editor on the Sunday People and the travel editor there, and she then worked for Rosemary Connolly's magazine, and I've got to tell you another secret, she's a far better writer than I am.
And she's a Chelsea fan, is that right?
Yes, she is.
One more thing before I let you go. FA Cup semi-final weekend, how do you think they're going to go, the games, Chelsea, Southampton and Tottenham against United?
Well, the wife and I would love to be a Chelsea Spurs final. It won't be the first one we've seen, but she would really like that. Unfortunately, I think Spurs and Chelsea aren't in the greatest run of form. Man United, I think, are going to be very difficult to beat, even at Wembley, which is in Colans, the home ground for Spurs these days. I could even see Southampton pulling off a surprise against Chelsea.
Wow.
You know, Man United Southampton final. I think that's a probable outcome, but we're all here hoping for Spurs and Chelsea.
Fantastic. Well, Harry, thank you ever so much for your time. I really hope to have you back on the show soon, because, you know, as I said, your knowledge and experience will be fantastic. We do our weekly review shows with Rodri Giggs, and it'll be fantastic to have you join us again. So I really appreciate your time.
Come do your show down at with the Legends World Cup. You know, Ozzy Ardiles is going to be doing one of the games, and you can't get better than the World Cup winner. come down and do the show from there.
Well, do you know what? It's funny you say that, because I know Ozzy's son, Feddy. And I've been trying to get Ozzy on for a long time, so I think that's the perfect opportunity. What do you think?
You're more than welcome. In fact, we're doing a promo video with Ozzy down at Planet Hollywood next week. Come down then.
You know, I think I will. Harry, yeah. Again, thank you ever so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Anytime.
Thank you very much. Guys, that was Harry Harris. A mind-blowing experience for me. Thanks for listening, guys. We're on Twitter @ShootTheDefence. Until next time, take care.